What up, what up? Welcome back to the Galati Pod, episode 6 of the Galati Pod. This is your host, Sean Galati. We got the tripod back together again. I'm sitting here alongside your boy, Samir DaCosta.
What up, what up?
And third podcast host, Peter Prionis.
What up, what up, what up?
And we are back to give you the reaction pod one day after the first pod out of the gates, as Samir likes to say, after the Iowa game, giving the reaction there and talk about implications for the rest of the year. So subscribe, rate, review, as you always do. Tell your friends. The podcast is hitting its midseason stride, and let's just get right into it. So as we always do, we talk about how we spent the game. Before we get into the game recap, so Samir, you want to talk about what we did? We watched the game together.
Yeah, we went to one of our buddies from college, a kid I went to high school with, John Cunningham. Shout out to him. Ate those $6 Aldi pizzas while we watched that game. And yeah, just had an overall good time. There were a group of us there, and good win for Michigan. I mean, Iowa was ranked 14. We were ranked 19, and we beat them. So
true. Yeah, shout out to all the guys. I know we last year I joined Samir's college friend group in doing these games together. So this is the first time that I was able to join them for this season. So that was good to get the band back together. And then Peter.
Yeah, I was unfortunately unable to make it. Was invited. So thank you both and all for including me. But had some things I had to attend to. So I got to catch most of the game. But got the highlights later
for sure. All right, let's get right into the game recap then. So we think it would be a little bit like overdoing it if we went by possession in this game, just because most would be like punt. So we'll just do how we used to do the game recap last year. We'll do offense, defense, special teams, except we're going to switch the order up. Started off with the hottest.
With the first podcast to start with special teams.
Yeah, I know. We lead it off with the hottest segment for all the fans. So we're going to talk about special teams, then go into defense, and then go into the thing we expect to talk the most about, the offense. So we'll start it off with the special teams, a segment that everybody wants to discuss. And yeah, what do you guys think about our special teams performance against Iowa?
So the thing that like stood out to me the most was, especially since there were so many punts, I think it would be a good thing to start off talking about punting. And we had Will Hart out there, and it seemed like he struggled a lot, especially at the start of the game and then right at the end of the game. He just like was not getting a lot of distance on his punts. And the punts that actually had a lot of distance, he was just line driving them, so Iowa didn't have anyone touching them for like the first 15 yards, which is, you know, I mean, he's been our punter now. I believe this is his second season, so, you know, hoping to see improvement, but not really seeing that out of him.
Yeah, I mean, technically speaking, I think regarding his punting average, he put up 45.6 on 8 punts. Obviously, there was a lot of punts, so I think he's getting some legs on most of these kicks. I know there's at least one in particular that he kind of shanked, but I mean, a lot of these punts were in kind of in shortish yardage situations where he really needed to pin them down, like within the 10 or at least within the 20, like not getting the touchback. And dude just seems to have no ability whatsoever to get some hang time up there and punt a little bit shorter. He just line drives all of these. Yeah. So that was a little bit disappointing, and those plays, I mean, make a big difference. Right. If you're going against an Ohio State team and you can pin them against the one versus having them start at the 20, like it makes a big difference. So luckily we were able to win this game, but I could see that playing a big role moving forward.
Yeah, and this gets a little bit ahead of ourselves, but Iowa had some penalties that helped us in the field position battle that we can't count on every team to give us. So, you know, getting that hang time to get defenders down there might be on the punter, but also maybe on the punt team. I'm no special teams coach, but it could be something where we're not getting guys down releasing quick enough on those punts that do go the distance.
For sure. Yeah. And then we can't obviously end this segment without talking about the kicking game itself.
Yeah.
Yeah, any general thoughts there? We saw both our kickers out there, Quinn Nordine lining up for the kick right before the half, shanking it. Unsurprisingly, I mean, obviously it's a tough kick, but it was kind of hilarious how he just started looking around and blaming everyone.
Right, that was weird. So, I mean, it was, I think they said 55, and then they, like, you know, corrected to like a 58-yard field goal. And it was actually a lot closer. Like, he had the distance.
He had the distance.
He was about, I can't tell how far away it was, but I thought it was a lot better than I would have expected him to kick it.
Not bad.
Yeah, not bad. Moody obviously made the first one, which made a huge difference in this game because Iowa, you know, was constantly trying to get that touchdown, which they couldn't get, credit to our defense. But then Moody missing that second field goal was, I mean, I think they said he was like 15 for 16 at that point. So, you know, it kind of sucks that both our kickers, it looks like they have yips in this game. And
yeah,
it doesn't bode well for us heading down a very tough stretch.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is the kind of game where that second miss that Moody had is like, you know, that's the game. If we kick that in and it's a two-possession game, you're feeling pretty damn good with this defense. And then that kind of left the door open for a while.
Right.
For sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough. My takeaway, too, is like, we got to just score. We got to score touchdowns. We get the ball in the end zone. We don't have to rely on those kickers, and they're not going to be perfect. And I think we've seen that across college football this season. I mean, this season and every season when you have kickers missing.
Yeah. I mean, in Moody's defense, I think that was more uncharacteristic of him.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. So in that sense, I'm not as concerned about him moving forward since he hasn't like made that a habit, especially in these shorter field goals. But I mean, clearly game situation wise, it was a big down, downer in the game. It would have put us up two scores for sure. Yeah, I'm not sure what to make of Nordin. Although it seems like in the game before, we love giving him these extra points and not giving them right. Moody. So I don't know what to make of that, but yeah.
But if you got a guy with that leg at the end of the half, you know, go for it.
Yeah, I love the decision. Yeah. It just, you know, even if we had a 25% chance of making it, that's better than, you know, Shea Patterson just checking up a Hail Mary and, you know, us possibly, like, getting picked off, him getting, like, you know,
wrecked,
getting hit, like, pretty hard. Yeah, exactly. So I like that decision. It just kind of sucks that, you know, most of us knew lining up that he probably wasn't going to make that.
For sure.
Yeah.
I will say, though, I don't think I've ever seen in my life a team have two kickers where one guy does the long field goals
mm-hmm.
and he also does the very short ones because he does all the extra points, and then Moody does all the ones in between those. It doesn't make any sense.
I think so Quinn did kick this extra point, but I think they like rotate. There's like
last week he did all of them too.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. Okay. He did all of like seven of them or whatever it
the
was.
The MGoBlog was like when they went on the WTK segment, they were talking about like, there's like some sort of formula behind it. I mean, I don't know. As long as they're not missing extra points, that doesn't matter.
Yeah, true. Yeah. Fine by me. Yeah. All right, that's enough on the special teams.
It's nice to see DPJ like, you know, fully healthy back there receiving punts.
Yes.
We had a little bit of issues in the beginning of the season with like Ronnie Bell receiving punts. I believe he dropped one. I think it was the Middle Tennessee State. It might have been the Army game.
Yeah.
So nice to see DPJ back there. Sure hands. Nothing, hopefully, we're to worry about for the rest of the season.
Although, since you bring it up and saying he has sure hands.
He did. Yeah, he did.
He did fumble the ball in this game.
But we recovered it, so it's okay.
It's just fine.
That was like the worst sequence of the game. But
yeah, we'll get into that for sure. All right, then. We'll switch it up then and talk about the defense. One of the, I mean, no doubt about it, big bright spots of this game. We had a lot of question marks against how we looked against Wisconsin. Obviously, less question marks against Rutgers, but that was Rutgers. So we were very interested to see how we would do against this Iowa team, ranked number 14, coming to the Big House. And the defense just looked straight up dominant. I mean, and relative to our season expectations for the defense going into this year, compared to last year, we knew we lost a lot of talent.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's expectations were, okay, the defense might take a little bit of a hit. Offense will hopefully carry us, but it seems to so far be the complete opposite. And the defense, it's not even just carrying their own. They're just straight up, they were just absolutely dominant in this game. So from pretty much from start to finish. So anyways, general thoughts on the defense?
Yeah, I'll just add to that. Just it was nice to get back to the variety of football where the other quarterback is just never comfortable.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That like the whole fourth quarter, they need one score. And every time Nate Stanley is dropping back to pass, you know he knows they're coming for him.
For sure.
And just to have him so unsettled, I think that's a feeling we sometimes feel on offense. It's nice to throw that on the opposing quarterback, especially someone, I think one of the announcers said something like, he looks like a first-year starter who just got thrown in, you know,
right,
because the starter got knocked out. But this is like Nate Stanley, who's been a starter for several years in the Big Ten, like mm-hmm. a senior, junior, senior, upperclassman, mm-hmm. like with a lot of experience under his belt, just looking like he didn't know what the hell was going on.
Yeah. I mean, three picks, like he had no picks this year, so great.
Yeah, I know Don Brown challenged the team, too, to get at least two picks in this game, and they surpassed it by getting three. And, I mean, dude just looked, I mean, like you said, totally uncomfortable the whole game, mm-hmm. and every single first down was a struggle. Like, mm-hmm. them moving 10 yards was just very, very challenging. And that, I mean, that just, like, mates the defense super pumped. Everyone out there seemed like they were really engaged. Aiden Hutchinson, beast of a game. Kwity Paye, beast of a game. Josh Uche looks so good out there. Cam McGrone, I mean, rushing to the quarterback. I mean, I don't want to call him Devin Bush because he's not, but he looks really good when he's rushing right. the quarterback. And that was stellar to see. LaVert Hill looked awesome on some of these picks.
I think he had one bad play, but then he has like multiple pass breakups, like a really good pick. Just, you know, overall played a really good game.
Ambry looked amazing. And Dax Hill getting a lot of playing time this game, mm-hmm. not just on special teams. So
my favorite thing about this defense is, and this is like kind of ironic, but I know we talked about this offseason a lot about speed and space in our offense. And starting this year, like, you know, we've always talked about our defense. You know, at the end of last year, Ohio State just crossing routed us to death because they were just faster than us. So it's nice to see we're kind of getting some of that speed on our defensive side. You know, we didn't start the season with Cam McGrone or Daxon Hill. Josh Uche wasn't necessarily that every down player. These are three extremely fast players that are now starting on our defense. You know, combine that with Ambry's speed. We got a lot of speed on defense.
No doubt.
And we did get like, crossed up on a couple of the crossing routes this game, but I think we actually played them pretty well. So, you know, against Ohio State, that's going to be a huge issue. Maybe even against Penn State, they like to spread the ball out. So it's nice to see we kind of have that speed to like mitigate our errors, but also like keep up with the opponents on those kind of plays.
Yeah, the big negative that comes to mind to me in terms of defense this game was Cam McGrone in coverage in man-to-man. I thought him doing anything beyond the line of scrimmage on their quarterback side of the ball was straight up dominant, but him in coverage, it seemed like they were picking on a bit and successfully. So I know that they completed at least three throws on him when he was in coverage against tight ends and running backs and even lining up in the slot. So that's something to keep in mind moving forward. But I mean, he's early on in his Michigan football career, clearly shows signs of dominance. So I'm picking on the small things for sure. But overall, we just looked so good.
Yeah, it was nice to see this kind of performance. I mean, obviously, we shut out Rutgers. Doesn't really mean much, but nice to see this performance out of our defense, out of like a decent Iowa team.
Yeah, and I think to go back to McGrone, one of the things that I loved from him, which is, again, kind of a small thing, he was getting to the quarterback, and every time he pushed Stanley back like 5 to 10 yards, like before the sack actually happened or before he threw it away, it was just like he was running at him with such like width too, that like he wasn't escaping. He turned Stanley around like every time rather than like having him run sideways to try to evade it. But the one thing I'll shout out, because I am a bigger Josh Metellus fan, I think, than the average Michigan fan. You see him back as a safety with that interception. He can
That was unreal.
He can get to those balls really well when he's playing deep. He obviously is another weakness sometimes on those crossing routes, but I like him playing deep because he's got the abilities to make those plays when he's playing off the ball.
For sure. Right. I mean, since you brought it up, that play on the ball and then LaVert Hill's play on the ball when it was like at our own 5-ish yard line that he caught like over the shoulder. I mean, those are some elite plays on the ball that I don't think Michigan football corners, I mean, aside from like guys like Jordan Lewis and things like that, it seems like we come up empty handed a lot of those like potential interception type plays. Mm-hmm. And those were just good eyes on the ball, and just great plays for defensive backs to make. And since we're talking about the DBs, I'm curious what you guys think. So, it seemed like Dax Hill was getting more of his playing time in our nickel and dime packages, and he wasn't really out there playing safety outside of that. How did you guys think we deployed our DBs? Do you think it was like good that we incorporated Dax in these situations? Do you think he should get more playing time in like a starting role, or how do you see it moving forward?
You know, I like the way we deployed him. Again, I think we have to remember that he is a true freshman. Vincent Gray is, you know, a third corner. I think he had one good breakup, one pretty bad pass interference. So not that bad. But I think with Daxton, just like the speed that he has, you know, I think you're just going to have to incorporate him more, because when you play Penn State, I mean, our biggest games are going to be like Penn State and Ohio State coming down the road. And, you know, just because, you know, those are Big Ten teams that, you know, Ohio State's our biggest rival, Penn State's on the road. They like to spread it out more. I think we're just going to see Daxon more. Yeah. I'd still give Vincent the nod just because he is a redshirt freshman, you know, had a little bit more experience playing on the, you know, even though he didn't play last year, he was in the system. But I mean, maybe if he can overtake him, you know, in November, I don't see a problem with that. But right now, I'd still give the nod to Vincent Gray over him.
Yeah. I'm not even really sure if it comes down to Vincent Gray, though. Like, it seemed like Dax was kind of, I know you were the one who said it on the podcast early on that we're going to kind of use Dax as just a Swiss Army knife back there.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, how we have been using him. It seems like he's playing in combination with Metellus and Hawkins back there, and then Ambry, Vincent Gray are taking a lineup. But you have seen Dax in cover situations along the line. Mm-hmm. So it seems like we are kind of using him that way, which is awesome.
And I know what Sean and I were watching the game together, and there were a couple plays, especially in the fourth quarter, where the inside guy, it might have been a tight end, but like we had no one lined up on him. It was like the last drive of the game. Like we were yelling. It's like, I think like put Daxton on that guy. Just like let him, let him figure it out at this point. It's pretty late in the season. I think it's like, you know, mid-season, we're trying to figure out who we are as an offense. If you are going to start playing Daxton a lot, then I think these are the situations that he needs to be in and needs to be playing, which, you know, helps us further down the road.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's an insurance policy down the road because he can play so many positions. It is interesting, though, because I think on offense, we talk a lot about having a diverse personnel and have specialty players. And, you know, you trot in like a big package with a couple tight ends and a fullback and how that puts such different pressure on a defense than pulling out a couple slot receivers. On defense, I feel like we're starting to have a number of those specialty guys, too. And Dax might fall into that category. But you got guys like Glasgow, who's getting a lot of snaps but kind of serves a limited purpose. You've got Uche, who's probably one of the best players on our defense, but also kind of serves a niche kind of role. And it's interesting. It'll be interesting to see how those play out, depending, like you're saying, are we playing a spread offense with a lot of speed, or are we playing, you know, someone like Michigan State, who's probably going to be a tough opponent, but in a very different way.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Yeah. Any final thoughts on the defense before we switch it over?
So, couple thoughts.
Yeah.
Jordan Glasgow had a couple pretty bad plays against Rutgers, but did have a sack this game, so bounced back well.
That was nice. That sack was nice.
So it's going to be interesting to see what happens when Josh Ross comes back, because McGrone has been taking Josh Ross's minutes because he's injured. So how, you know, do you slide? Does Josh Ross now take Glasgow's position? Does, you know, Ross come back and play his old position and McGrone takes Glasgow's position? So I think it's going to be interesting to see what they do with that linebacking core. It's nice to have all that, you know, talent back there.
For sure.
And I don't think we're going to see it against Illinois, but, you know, after that we go to Penn State. They haven't announced when the game is yet, but Penn State's in 2 weeks. That's going to be a really tough game. So it'll be interesting to see how our linebackers match up that game.
For sure. I will say, though, Don Brown, though, it'll be interesting to see how the minutes breakdown, but I don't see one person being there 100% of the time and the other person being there zero. I think like D-line is like one great example of it. Like we see guys in rotation all the time, and same with the linebacking core. Yeah. So I think the more guys he has out there, like the fresher they are, and he's just better at using him when there's more guys available.
Yeah. The other thing is, I don't think Dorm Foreman would have made a difference against Wisconsin, but it's nice to see him out there like in that rotation.
He kind of exploded through the line sometimes. Definitely. He looked good.
So We didn't have him. I believe he played the first game, like got it re-injured his hand. So like he's back now, healthy. Good to see that.
Yeah. All right.
Rushing Rutger, our second in a row.
Yeah.
Boom.
Thanks to sacks.
And cover the spread as well.
Yes. And it's impressive to do when you only scored 10 points.
Exactly. Yeah. Both the rushing Rutger and the line spread coverage.
Yeah.
All right, then, let's switch it over and talk about the thing that probably needs a little bit of a deeper dive, and we'll talk about the offense then. We're not going to break this down possession by possession because most of them ended in punts. Anyway, general recap on how the game went. We started the game off pretty nicely, got a 10-0 lead in the first like 7 minutes or so, and then for the remaining 53 minutes, put up zero. Kept it a one possession game the whole entire time. Couldn't capitalize on the field goal like we already talked about. But anyway, there's a lot of offensive drives that got stalled, turnovers involved as well. Anyway, I don't know where we want to start here in particular, but anyways, what do you guys think generally on the offense in terms of recap and what'd you think?
I think I'm going to quote Samir from just a few minutes ago about how Iowa's successes were such an effort when they did come. Those first downs were an effort. And that's just how it felt for me the entire game, is like what successes our offense did have seemed either like a fluke or like we had won the lottery when we got like an 8-yard play.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just something that is really frustrating and has been frustrating, I think, for Michigan fans as we adapt this quote unquote new kind of spread offense, is that nothing comes easily. We had the one long play down to Nico in the first quarter that set up our scoring our touchdown, and it was just like, do that. Do more of that thing that was really successful.
Yeah.
And I feel like we just, you know, the completions we did have were on like short yard outs, you know, and nothing that was really progressing down the field. And that was disappointing and frustrating and also quite familiar.
Right. Yeah, what'd you think?
So, couple things. First, positive. I believe this game was Mikey Sandrissel caught his first ball. So, shout out to him.
A follower of the Gladi Pod Twitter account.
Yeah, it's a different FOTP.
Charbonnet had a touchdown. You know, good for freshmen. Get that confidence. I was just surprised. So, we started off the game with two runs. We got a first down. And then we had throughout the game just like a couple decent runs, but like nothing consistent. And that was, I mean, I think that's just like the most frustrating thing is there's no consistency to our offense. And it's like, okay, you have these nice runs, but like now you don't build off anything from that. You know, you don't go deep with that pass. I think our hands are an issue. Tariq had a couple catches that he probably should have caught. Ronnie Bell dropped a ball as well. So that's something that needs to be figured out. But again, like you said, like everything is just an effort with this offense. And the whole point of bringing Gattis in was it wasn't supposed to be an effort. It was supposed to be like, get you guys out in space. They make people miss. And, you know, even if they don't take the house, they get like 20, 25 yards. And we're just like not seeing that out of this offense, which is very, very frustrating.
For sure. I really don't know where to start here. It just seemed like there's too many things that went wrong to focus in on all of them individually. I will say, I mean, starting from the top down, though, quarterback-wise, so Patterson now has 5 fumbles and 3 interceptions through 5 games and a turnover in 8 straight games going back to last year. And I mean, I do think the Michigan fan base is making it a little too simplistic, though, I think, and to say that everything will change as soon as we start a Dylan McCaffrey or even the people in the fringe crowd who want to start Joe Milton. But, yeah, if you just watch the details in a lot of the play beyond the quarterback position, clearly Shea has thrown a lot of interceptions. Clearly he has a lot of fumbles. Clearly he has some missed throws. But guys on the O-line are playing – have a lot of, like, if you follow, I know we like to shout out this Twitter account a lot, the do hashtag football account on Twitter. A lot of the plays he's talking about on a lot of the film he shows on his Twitter account is just people missing blocks on the O-line. So it comes down to attention to detail, and I don't think a simple quarterback switch is going to change everything. Clearly, I already listed a lot of problems that did happen to the quarterback, so it definitely possibly could give us a big boost. But there's just so much going on beyond the quarterback position, and it just comes down to attention to detail at pretty much every position level. So I'm not really sure what the answer is from here, but we just saw a lot of that same thing happen against Iowa with regard to blocking, with regard to more turnovers, Shea throwing the interception, with regard to passes not being completed, Ronnie Bell having that one drop, for example. And yeah, I'm not really sure where to start except to say that there's a lot that's going wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that you kind of bring up a lot of little things from the player's perspective. And it's like, what does perfect execution get us in a game like this, right? Where do we get with like the same play calling, the same offensive scheme, but like more efficiency from the players? And I don't know that the answer is like a great offense. In fact, I would argue that it's probably still a decent offense, but just like with a few more successes along the way. And I don't know what the players can do to overcome some of the structural things, at least where we're at now, right? I think that there's still some room to grow in the season, but I really don't think that the players, like, you know, like you're saying, bringing in Dylan McCaffrey, could that help? Sure. Do I think that would help? Probably. Is that going to make us a competitor for the Big Ten? No.
Right.
Hopefully.
I mean, maybe, but not, you're not right. Him alone.
Shea's looking at this game, it seems like, and Shea's the quarterback, so we do put a lot of it on him, you know, whether that's fair or not. But it does seem that Shea has been making a lot of mistakes. And, again, fair or not to, like, blame it on the quarterback. But, you know, maybe it is Dylan's turn. Like, Shea has not shown any – like, I mean, honestly, this game, Shea had a couple good scrambles. He had one good design run. He had that one good pass to Nico Collins. I mean, we're counting on one hand. Like, and he played the whole game. We're counting on one hand the things he did right. And then, you know, you look at that pick that he threw. It was just, like, terrible.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, just, you know, bad decision after bad decision. And, you know, some of it's probably on his wide receivers as well. But it's just, at what point do you, like, cut the cord and say, hey, man, this is, like, not working out?
Let's have the conversation then. Let's go around the tripod and say, do you, if we have a healthy Dylan McCaffrey as an option, do you start Dylan McCaffrey next week?
I wouldn't. I would start Shea. I think it's the kind of game where you're playing a team you're going to be, you know, favored to beat by three scores, and you hope that you get a half for Dylan McCaffrey in the second half. I think I'm in the boat still that Dylan hasn't shown me on the field enough just because of the opportunity he hasn't had yet to make me think he's supplanting Shea. I give them maybe even as explicit as, like, you're playing to see who's starting against Penn State. But I would still start Shea next week because I think you're in a position where he may be inserviceable if he gets just benched at this point in the season. And I think you might need Shea down the road.
Okay, so that was a no, but it was a qualifier that I still want to see Dylan McCaffrey play next game. It's just a matter of starting that you didn't want to see.
I think that if the game plays out where we're ahead by enough, right, then Dylan gets in. And I think if the game's close, Dylan gets in. I'd give Shea the start.
Gotcha. What do you think?
So I think we should start Dylan McCaffrey next game. And here's my reasoning. I think Illinois is, in terms of talent-wise, probably the second worst team in the Big Ten behind Rutgers. And there's probably actually a decent gap. But if we're going to start Dylan, if we have a bad game, we're probably not going to have a bad game against Illinois, right? It's going to be like a Rutgers-esque type game where we're like, oh, maybe we turn the corner. And it's clearly, like, obvious that we didn't turn the corner in terms of our offense. So, like, I don't want to, like, go, because if we, this team should probably still have Big Ten aspirations, right? We lost one game. It was to a team on the other division.
Right.
Right. So, like, there's no point in, like, I feel like the psyche of the Michigan fan base right now is, oh, we're done because we lost so badly to Wisconsin. And yeah. I mean, if you were to, like, map out our season, we're probably not going to win the Big Ten. But, like, why would we give up now?
Right.
And it clearly seems with Shea Patterson, he just, like, cannot get the job done. I mean, I still go back to the Wisconsin play where this was the play that we walked out of the game for. It was when Nico Collins was running down the field. His defender tripped about 2 seconds into that play, and Shea couldn't find him for about 7 seconds. And, I mean, I'm not saying Dylan would have done that, but, man, like, that just shows, like, just a regression in talent because I think he would have gotten it last year. I like Dylan, obviously, last year broke his collarbone, got concussed, and a lot of it has to do with his running, but I think Dylan is a better runner than Shea, and I think this offense needs it. So I do want to start Dylan next week because, like, you know, at least give him those reps in a hostile-ish crowd. I bet there's going to be at least 40%.
Right.
Yeah, I was doing air quotes there. I bet there's going to be at least 40% Michigan fans at this game next week. Give him that, like, you know, give him those reps in, like, a hostile-ish crowd. So, you know, if Penn State's a night game, I mean, I want him starting at least one game before then. And, you know, again, Shea clearly has proved that he can't get the job done. Penn State is a much better team than Iowa. And, I mean, if we have Shea at quarterback heading into Penn State, I think we lose that game. I'm not saying we win it with Dylan, but I'd want at least more a different, like, I just want the chance to, like, say, hey, we have something new in the pipeline to, like, possibly beat Penn State.
Yeah, so going off of what I said before, I want to pump the brakes in saying that I don't actually think I'm not 100% sure how much of a quarterback change will make for this offense. But I also want to start Dylan McCaffrey next week for the exact same reasons that you just did. I thought you did a really good job at outlining all those points. Shea Patterson has been, I mean, we did have a offseason offensive coordinator change for sure. That has changed things on him. But he's been our quarterback now for a year and a half. He's gotten a lot of reps in his offense. He's been a starter for multiple seasons now across two different programs. And he's just not producing at a level that we would hope. particularly in terms of turnovers, particularly in terms of him as a threat, as a running option. And we know for sure that Dylan McCaffrey as a runner, I think we all are in agreement that him as a runner is a much bigger threat than Shea Patterson, especially on these read options where it seems like Dylan McCaffrey is actually reading the guy, and Shea Patterson, either because he's told not to read the guy or because he's worried about injury, he's just far too often handing the ball off to Charbonnet or whoever else is back there with the read option. So in terms of the threat of a run and just like wanting a new change to see if it brings a spark to the offense, obviously Dylan McCaffrey is the younger guy, so we'd potentially be setting him up for a longer career down the road. And just going off what you said, I really don't see, like, if 10 points is your output against Iowa at home, like, what is your offensive output going to be against Penn State on the road? Mm. Like, it's not going to fall off that much. There's not much room to fall down from Shea Patterson to Dylan McCaffrey. And in terms of exactly what you said, I totally agree. If you're going to get in the situation where you want to be putting Dylan in against Penn State, you want to get him at least one game starting experience this season before heading into that game. So I totally agree. I'm not sure how much of a spark it's going to make. I do think, as I've said for probably a year and a half now, Dylan McCaffrey's best years at Michigan will be better than Shea Patterson's best years at Michigan. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, and our offense is this low at this point in the season, why don't we just make the switch? You see this happen at other college football programs all the time when they think the better quarterback is the second quarterback. Just throw him in there.
Yeah,
like
Kelly
like
Bryant.
We're so hesitant to do that at Michigan for whatever reason. And I think it's just about time we just roll the dice and throw Dylan out there.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we can focus on Penn State and Illinois and Penn State because those are the next two games. But, you know, like you said, if our offensive output against Iowa at home is 10 points, I mean, you know, maybe we can stomach that Penn State loss. And, you know, I mean, it sucks, but probably that Ohio State loss. But, like, what are your outputs against, you know, Notre Dame and Michigan State, who are coming to the Big House, who are games that, like, fans will expect you to win those games? Like, I mean, Michigan State is a much better defense than Iowa, and you're putting up 10 points against Iowa. What are you going to put up against Penn State? I mean, what are you going to put up against Michigan State?
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I think the one thing that I'll add, because I'm not in total disagreement with any of the arguments y'all made, but I think that the psyche of the fan base is very different from the psyche of the team. And while you and I might be sitting here, or at least I am, and thinking, okay, well, there's not a chance we're going to win the Big Ten this year, I think that the coaches are thinking there is. And so to throw out Dylan McCaffrey against Penn State for like a, well, why not? He's going to be the future of the program, is in some ways the fans' call for like, let's just see what happens. Let's roll the dice. You know what I mean? And so like, what happens if you start Dylan against Illinois and he struggles? Then like, what are you doing for the rest of this season where you're like, okay, well, are we going to put Shea back in? Or like, what? I think that the chances of, like, we're all on this idea that, like, oh, well, Dylan's going to start and he's going to be better. And he might be, but I think there's probably some reasons why he hasn't had that chance so far. And some of it might be related to his injury in the Wisconsin game, and some of it might be just to how they're playing in practice. But I think that if Dylan is better, it's not going to be, maybe I'm wrong, I hope I'm wrong, it's not going to be as clear cut of a difference and head and shoulders above what Shea offers us. And it comes back to like, well, is this the quarterback's fault or is this the system's fault or what's going on? Yeah.
I'm not sure what to add beyond that. I do think, I just think the time's come. You play to win.
You play to win the game.
The game, and you play to win Big Ten championships. And if you don't think your offense is going to like take it to another level with the current situation, and there is a chance of hope with the next guy, especially because we do think, I mean, the talent is there in Dylan McCaffrey. I think now's the time. You don't have a lot of opportunities where you play a quote unquote like lesser team in the Big Ten midway through the season where you can potentially throw into Dylan McCaffrey and have room for error. So I think now's the game. If he is clear to play, then I think it would make sense. But
yeah. But I think that's your opinion as a fan, and I'm not sure that the coaches are like having this same thought process and then just sitting on their ass. You know, I think that the coaches in general are going to be conservative, which is probably a bad thing from our fans' perspective. But like, I think that there's a good chance we could win some of these games like 10-3, and it's going to make us pull our hair out because we have so much talent on offense. But I think that there's a much greater risk of rolling the dice with a new quarterback, even someone who looks really talented. And I think that's kind of where this perspective comes from.
Yeah,
from
the coaches. I disagree. I don't think that there's a higher chance of us winning more games with Shea Patterson at like games like 10-3. I don't think that's the case. Otherwise, I would probably side with wanting to stick with Shea. I just want to do whatever wins us the most games, and I don't see the offense falling off to a lower tier if we start Dylan McCaffrey.
Is there a lower tier?
Yeah, is there a lower tier? And I don't think our defense can hold teams like Ohio State, definitely not teams like Ohio State, teams like a Penn State, teams like a Notre Dame to 3 points. It's not going to happen. You got to put up points on the board, and putting up 10 points against an Iowa team at home is not a good showing. And yeah, I just think, I mean, I think we're so far we're kind of talking about it on this podcast as if Dylan McCaffrey is like rolling dice out there. I think all of us are very high on Dylan McCaffrey as a talent. So I think the one thing we need to coach him to do is like maybe stop lowering your shoulder and stay a little healthier and protect your head and protect your collarbone. But I mean, it's not like I'm saying roll the dice on like an unknown talent. Exactly. Like we're rolling the dice on a Dylan McCaffrey, like one of the hottest recruits coming out, one of the fastest guys on the team, a guy with a great arm and a guy who runs a read option really well, all of which are important in our offense and in Josh Gattis offense. So yeah, roll the dice is also in air quotes by saying, I'm just high on Dylan.
And Urban Meyer brought up the fact, I think it was after the Wisconsin game, you know, it's hard to run an RPO offense if you don't have that quarterback threat, of the quarterback willing to run. And again, you know, we don't know if Shea's not running because, you know, he's injured and the coach are telling him not to, or he just like isn't making the right reads, or he doesn't want to. But Dylan in the past has shown the, like it's shown that he wants to run or will, you know, pull that ball and run himself.
He's got his brother's mentality.
Yeah, maybe that'll open up the offense. I don't know. A side note, do you see his brother, who's a quarterback in Nebraska, I believe got him for like one play because like Nebraska's Adrian Martinez got injured and then their backup quarterback had like their helmet fly off. Yeah. So like he actually had to come in with one play and they ran him. So McCaffrey runs and hopefully that'll open up our offense. I mean, again, if Shea's a quarterback, like clearly the coaches know that Dylan's not ready or Shea gives us the better shot. But, you know, as a fan, again, I'd like to see it.
For sure.
Yeah, and just to clarify, like, I don't think that McCaffrey's rolling the dice so much. I just think that to give him the start, the coaches might be thinking, like, if we're making this change and it goes poorly, then, like, how do we stumble back from that? Are we then in a season-long quarterback controversy, or, like, do we stick with Dylan at maybe some cost? So I think that I am in agreement with you, but I think what I would say is that the coaches might be like approaching this from a more conservative perspective. The only other thing I'll add, as we're talking about like pulling and on the zone read, at the end of the game, Shea was pulling more against Iowa. So the last drive we had to get like, if we get a first down, we win the game kind of thing. And he pulled on two or three zone reads. And it was just interesting to me because I think that the offensive schema still has this idea that like, oh, the zone read pull is going to be a big surprise. And so that I think that's something that won't necessarily change with Dylan. I would hope it does, but I don't think it's as simple as like Dylan does it better or Dylan has the green light and Shea doesn't. And I think there's still going to be a lot of those limitations, even if when he pulls, he's more dangerous than Shea, which I agree.
Yeah. I mean, clearly we're, I'm going to compare apples to oranges in comparing, him pulling yesterday versus him pulling against Wisconsin, because it's a different Shea Patterson. He has 2 weeks that he could potentially be a lot healthier than he was against Wisconsin. But I did think it was completely different in how Shea Patterson was running the read option versus Dylan McCaffrey in the Wisconsin game. I thought Dylan McCaffrey seemed like he was much more adept at reading the guy or just had the green light. And it looked like it was night and day different compared to how Shea Patterson was running at that game. It just seemed like that was like a base run, even though it looks like a read option versus Dylan McCaffrey was like, all right, I'm fucking going at these guys and I'm just lowering my shoulder and doing this. So I did think that was different. Anyway, I kind of proposed the question about quarterback before we even talked about anything else to do with the offense. And that's all we talked about today. Do we want to talk about anything else?
I like that True Wilson got a couple carries.
He did. He looked good on some of them.
Looked good. I know at the start of the season, we kind of were, when you and I did like the preview podcast, we talked about like, you know, how much run is Drew Wilson going to get? And I was more pessimistic just because, you know, Charbonnet has the talent. Christian Turner has the speed, and, you know, with speed and space being like that mantra that we had at the start of the season, and I thought they would like gobble up a lot of the carries. But I am actually going to be a more of a proponent of getting Drew Wilson more carries. Clearly, he can pound out those like 6-7 yards, and he is probably still our best pass protector. Yeah. So maybe if that's the kind of thing that, you know, gets Shea more comfortable with staying in the pocket, I'm all for it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Anything else you want to add on the offense?
I just off of that, like if you got Drew Wilson in the game, make sure you give him the ball enough to know that he's not just a tip of the hat for the pass.
Wilson.
Yeah.
True. 100%. Yeah, I thought the rest of the offense, Nico looks like Nico. Charbonnet looked good. He was getting his carries again. O-line looked decent. Again, a lot of some mixed blocks mixed in there too. But I think the big question mark is just it was quarterback coming out of this
game. And then Tariq, I don't think his hands have gotten worse, but out of the big three, his hands aren't probably the best out of the big three.
For sure. All right, then. We'll switch it up then and go right into the rap outro. This week we got Salt and Peppa Push It because Aiden Hutchinson said after the game that Quiddy Pay came up for a name for us, and that's Salt and Pepper. So shout out to them. We'll shout it out to Salt and Peppa and do the rap outro. And I got a couple of stats that I thought were interesting to talk about. So under Kirk Ferentz, Iowa is 61-1. When the opposing team scores 10 points or less. And that one is obviously the game that happened yesterday. So that was good, given the one loss there. And then just in general, I probably should have talked about this on the pod last week when we were talking, or maybe 2 weeks ago after the Wisconsin game when we were talking about does Harbaugh need to get fired? And there was all that talk out there. Here are the stats, just for the record, for the podcast of wins and losses at Michigan football, the two coaches before Harbaugh versus Harbaugh. So Brady Hoke and Rich Rodriguez, a combined 46-42 at Michigan. Harbaugh is 41-15. And I think that just is like a very crude number. And just, I think if you would have asked fans to guess that, they kind of do not remember that it was that bad during the Hoke and Rich Rod eras. One 10-win season in those two coaches' eras. Harbaugh has three and 1 week ranked in the AP top 10 among the previous two head coaches. Harbaugh has 32 weeks ranked in the top 10. So I just think that's a big difference, and I think the people calling for Harbaugh's head are kind of nuts.
Misinformed
for sure.
Yeah, and then one thing I want to say is Quiddy Pay had another good game. I don't know if we talked about it on defense, but he had another good game. I think he did come up with an injury, so probably don't need him next week against Illinois, but hopefully against Penn State he's back.
Yeah,
how could you forget how bad the Hoke years were?
Yeah, seriously, he played a concussed quarterback. Like, I mean, for me, the Hoke, like, that was like truly the defining moments of like the Hoke era.
Lack of,
like,
awareness.
He put a quarterback out there who had a concussion, and literally the whole stadium and everyone watching were like, what are you doing? And how could you guys forget those? I mean, I guess in a sense it's like good that we have these like raised expectations, but man, Harbaugh's done a great job here. Like, stop complaining.
For sure. All right, we'll go ahead and end the pod right there. We'll save you guys some hot Real Talk or overreactions for next week on the pod. Any final thoughts before we get into the game against Illinois?
No, just beat Illinois.
Beat Illinois.
I think we'll beat them.
All right, we'll end the pod right there. Good tripod, getting the team back together. Go Blue next week against Iowa in our new home state of Illinois, though none of us are going.
Yeah.
Go Blue against Illinois. We'll hit you up with a reaction pod. Follow the pod on Twitter. Going to get you guys those sideline videos at some point soon. Anyway, we'll end the pod right there. Go Blue. Peace out.
Go Blue.
Go Blue.